This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
How big do you want the wave pictures?
The wave pictures? How big should the wave picture thingy-madoobers be?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are 10 seconds into recording and already having technical difficulties.
Should the wave thingy-madoober pictures be large or should they be small?
Hello! And welcome back to Teabags and Joysticks, the kinky video game podcast. I am Sai.
I'm Chris.
And today we are joined by the man of a thousand voices and a few faces, Mr. D-O-A-K, otherwise known as Doak.
Hello!
And the man who has found himself never to be emotionally available, and yet somehow always remains there as his grumpy self, Mr. Ian.
I do what I can. What can I say?
How are we all?
Well, I have a COVID test on Tuesday. So
that was really unfortunate because for the benefit of our listeners, like Doak comes to me yesterday and goes, "So we're recording tomorrow, right?" So it's like, yes. So it's like, okay, that's fine because I've got a COVID test coming up. I'm like, are you okay?
Oh, I'm feeling much better. Just the timing is unfortunate.
Right. You're not dead yet. This is good.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, at least we've set the tone. I mean, I guess we can call this a party.
It's only going downhill from here, guys.
Does anyone have wine and cheese?
No, I just have tea. I'm sorry.
Yeah, got tea.
We have tea. Let's carry on with tea, shall we? Because okay. By the time this goes out, we don't even know if he's still got a job. So anyway, what's the tea, Chris?
What are we
this
on
really
about?
This really is going downhill in a hurry, guys. Damn. Start with death, end with I don't even know if you've got a job later. Wow.
What are we on about?
Well, I was referring to Boris Johnson and the parties because, you know, we're two British guys.
You need to make that more explicit because I had no idea what you were talking about.
Okay, that's fair. But a quick thing, just for the listeners that are regular with us, this is not necessarily going to be our regular show. There will be tea. The bag this week is going to be a rear-end review as we look back at the games that we have played over the last year. Mm-hmm. And we award our categories of choice, which everyone will be thankful to hear we have streamlined since last year, but we will get to that momentarily. There will be no kink this week, I'm afraid.
Just well, be honest, you didn't want me talking for 6 hours straight.
Yeah, anyone who listened to the last one knows it went on a long time. Yes. You don't know how much was cut. There was literally 8 hours of
just
recording.
Just be honest.
So let's move on to the tea.
I'm looking forward to doing round two tomorrow.
What's the tea, Chris?
Tea. I have got Sports Ball Corner.
Okay. Is this good or bad sports ball?
Oh, it's a neutral sports ball.
That's not like you.
Sports Ball Corner this week is Cembalubaksi, who is a Turkish driver who he has just been signed on by a Formula 2 team.
Okay.
And why do I want to talk about him, you would ask? Because unlike most other drivers, basically every other driver on the grid who started their careers with karting, he started his career with sim racing on computers.
Ooh. Oh! That's kind of cool.
Yes.
That's also kind of terrifying.
Suddenly I'm reminded of that's a really old episode of Top Gear where Clarkson was doing, I don't even remember what circuit it was now, but he's driven the circuit numerous times in a real car. And then he was trying to do it in PS2 Gran Turismo, and he literally could not do it. He could not do it. He knew every corner. He knew exactly how to hit them. He could not do it. He kept crashing.
I find this kind of fascinating, though, because that kind of says a lot about how far video games and like the technology of simulation has come.
Yes.
Like, indeed. I remember when I was, what, 16, 17, and one of the driving school things near me had, like, a... They had a virtual vehicle, and it was kind of cool, but it paid no, like, reference... You got the idea, but it didn't really pay much reference to real life.
Right.
That someone's been able to take a simulation and then transfer into the actual motorsport. Like,
obviously, well, obviously he didn't jump straight from computers to Formula 2.
NASCAR was doing sim racing in lieu of live events.
Indeed.
What, 2020 they were doing that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember this. Didn't someone get disqualified as well because they cheated?
After rage quitting, there were people basically getting
disqualified. There were people rage quitting because they couldn't even do it. It was fascinating. They really should keep doing that because they were drivers that were normally back of the pack that knew exactly how to play all this stuff and were like pole position every time. It was interesting.
I also don't know if this was staged or not, but I've seen clips of, like, their kid brings up a bowl of cereal. Here you go, Dad. Oh, no, I spilled it all over you. Mid-race.
Fair enough. That is kind of cool, though. I like that. That's a neat little thing. Mm. So, does anyone else have tea? I'm just going to throw it across to, like, you two first.
I definitely do. For sure. Go on. I do. So, come on, Ian. So last year, the regular listeners may remember I brought up the saga of Star Citizen, and I'm here to report to you that in the year of our Lord, 2022, Star Citizen is still not out.
Yay!
Do we need an anime style previously on Teabags and Joysticks?
Previously on Teabags and Joysticks, Star Citizen was not out. Now on Teabags and Joysticks, Star Citizen still isn't out.
Has there been any developments on that front?
Oh yeah, so in the last year they raised an additional $61 million. So now this game is 33.9 million. Yes, $339 million have been sunk into the development of this game that is still not out.
What? Hold on.
The money. $60 million.
What are they doing with this money?
Yeah.
How?
Presumably filling a Scrooge McDuck style pit and swimming in it.
I'm just blown away at how they got $60 million of money from.
But who the fuck are these people who are still doing it? Yeah.
I'm assuming most of this is crowdfunding as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, we covered that last year. Like, this started as Kickstarter, and then they have since left Kickstarter, and now it's just via their website. They sell all of the things and just make buttloads of money that they just, I guess, fill a giant pit with, or they have a singularity somewhere. They're just feeding a singularity, and it's just, bye. This game will never come out. This has been your yearly Star Citizen update.
Is it bad that I'm at this point where I'm just kind of fascinated, just waiting for the moment that this falls apart? Because I know they've already been in court and things because of various engine difficulties and IP difficulties. Like, when this blows up, like, this is like going to blow up on the NFT scale where there's going to be a lot of people left holding the bag.
It's going to be amazing. At this point, it doesn't matter how good this game is.
Yeah.
If this game does not do your laundry, take care of your children, cook you dinner, and come gold plated, it is not going to be worth the development cost.
So has it reached the status where no matter how it releases, it will be a disappointment?
Yes. I think it was at that stage before it even left Kickstarter.
Okay.
Yeah, it was at that point about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And it's kept raising money since.
But my favorite part of this, really, really quickly, back in November, end of November, I saw the article about this. And the article basically amounted to, like, the long shot of the article was, this is how much money they've raised, and the game still isn't out. But it was written like, If you've watched or you remember Watchmen, the part where Dr. Manhattan is going is describing his life after he goes to Mars, and he's going backwards and forwards. He's like, the year is this, and this is happens. And then he's like, flashes forwards like 30 years. The year is this, and then he's backwards like 20 years. The article is written in that like kind of frame, and it was really fun to read.
Wow. Okay, that's going to be monumental. When that's had to what, over 300 million? You said.
Yes. So we are up to, yeah, it's basically $400 million at this point. It's like 339. I don't remember. It was,
wow.
It's something absolutely obscene. Wow. This is a game that now has the budget of like a small country. I mean,
yeah, this is what I was thinking.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Is it bad that I'm going to be kind of fascinated to play it when it does come out? If it comes out.
To be fair, many people would tell you, you can play it right now. What are you talking about? Can you, though?
I'm not paying for it.
It's still kind of a pre-release beta. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not paying that price for it. Exactly, when it comes out and it's a $60 game, fine.
At that, no, honestly, when you have spent $400 million on development, you should be releasing it for free. You already have taken their money. You can't make them pay for it again. Come on.
You want to bet? They took $60 million last year.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. Doak, do you have tea, my dear?
I don't have tea. It will be saved for later.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Do I have tea? I actually think I don't have tea, possibly for the first time on the show.
Doak doesn't have tea. Doak has iced tea. He's saving it.
I like that. I like that. Well, with that being the case, shall we move straight into the bag?
And head on
to the award show. And
do we have some kind of like grandiose music for to introduce the award show?
I'm going to say I don't at this moment, but I'm sure that our sound guy can give us some later.
I think we've just had some music. It's fine.
So, before we get going, let's establish what the rules are going to be. Each category is going to be given a nomination from each of our panel, which is the four of us. We do have a few honourable mentions that will be brought in at the end. But each category will get four nominations. Each person will have 3 minutes or thereabouts, there will be a little bit of leeway with that, to make the case for their game before we have an open discussion.
Oh, really? I was looking forward to using the buzzer sound.
You can use the buzzer sound, but use it at your discretion. My thing was, a few seconds either side of 3 minutes is going to be fine, sort of thing. And then from there we will choose our winner. Mr. Ian is now cradling a cat like a Bond villain, which has me slightly concerned as we go into this. For our listeners, you should see the very maniacal face that's being pulled by Mr.
Expect you to die.
Yeah, don't use his second name. But yeah.
We don't use surnames.
That's why I can bleep it out.
Mr. Kink.
Mr. King.
That's fine. I shall foil your plans, Mr. Kink. But you shall not foil mine.
From there, we will choose our winner. This year, there are four categories because we have slimlined this. We have the tea of the year, which is the game that has given us the most conversation. That doesn't necessarily mean for me and Chris on the podcast. It means within our social circles, etc. We have the fruit tea, which is the most inclusive game gaming of the year. We have our tea bagging award, which is given to the worst in video games for the year. And we have our joystick award, which is what we consider the best of gaming in the year. One last thing before we start, because we cannot do an award show without acknowledging this. The gaming industry this year has been an utter shit show.
I think that's putting it politely.
That's putting it very politely. from a number of incidents involving but not limited to sexism, transphobia, bullying in the workplace to the point of suicide, and a number of other issues, there have been a lot of bad actors within the industry this year. We do not condone any of that. And we will not condone any of that. So let's make very clear. Just because a company's game may get mentioned here does not mean that we condone their actions. The video game industry is a very large industry. There are a lot of honest people working within it. There are a lot of people that put a lot of time into many of these games and are victims of where they work by association, not necessarily by action. We do not, on this show, stand by any of what has happened with the industry that has come out within Blizzard, within EA, within Ubisoft, or within any other company that we haven't mentioned right now, just they are the biggest three that we are aware of. With that said, let's get on with the show as we move in to the tea of the year.
Yay!
So, in the interests of trying to keep some form of order here, shall we do this alphabetically?
Oh. Okay. Does that mean...
In fact, you know what? No, let's not do that alphabetically, because that's going to get complicated. Let's just do it in whichever way that you're appearing on my Discord right now, which means that we will go Chris, Doak, myself, and then Mr. Ian, because we're going to have to trim Mr. Ian, I think, because Mr. Ian has a tendency to end up in the weeds.
Fuck you. With all due respect. Fuck you, sir. Fuck you.
Good boy. So
I bite my thumb at thee, sir.
Chris, what would your nomination for Tea of the Year be?
For the tea, my nomination is It Takes Two.
Okay.
There are two ways to look at it. The gameplay.
Okay.
One that was the one that generates conversation, and the story, which was generates a conversation in a completely different way. Because it really does deal with divorce and relationship breakdown in a really, really negative way. And yeah, the story is completely basically wrong. It kind of implies that people should stick together regardless of how they feel about each other, just for the child's sake, for which is not how relationships work.
Think of the children.
Which is not how relationship works. On the other hand, the gameplay is fantastic. It's probably the best two-player co-op game for definitely a very long time, if not ever. The gameplay mechanics is fantastic. So yeah, these are the two reasons why people are having conversations about It Takes Two.
Was that the one where if you bought it, you could then send someone a download code for them to play it with you? Okay.
Yes.
That did get my attention.
Okay. And it is now on Game Pass. So you don't even have to do that.
Okay.
Fair enough.
For those that care about Game Pass.
Anything, well, I'm sure we'll get to that. Anything that you would like to add? You still have another minute or so?
No, not really.
Fair enough. Mr. Doak, what is your nomination for Tea of the Year?
Tea of the Year, I'm going to have to go with Halo Infinite.
Okay.
Frankly, for the fact that it is the game that got us talking the most.
Okay.
Whether it be positive, negative, and, you know, a good mixture of both, it is... been an interesting adventure as the player and the listener of people who have played it.
Okay. Interesting. You still have a good couple of minutes if you want to add anything more, or if you're happy with that. We can maneuver?
We can maneuver.
Okie doke. My nomination for Tea of the Year is going to be Hades. And this was a game that I actually... As silly as this is going to sound, I almost forgot to include in this category. Hades has become one of those games that just about every single queer person that I know has something to say about this game, whether they have played it or whether they have just watched gameplay. from the visual art style that has everyone absolutely enamored with the game, and in my opinion, rightly so, to the storytelling and the gradual procedural method in which that is borne out, and through to just generally Daddy Zagreus, anybody? Or Daddy Hades, if that's your shtick? Like,
yeah, not Daddy Zagreus.
Hey, you know?
Boy Zagreus.
Well, depends on your perspective, I guess. Boy. But still, like, I don't think there is a single queer person that has any sort of scope within video games that I have spoken to this year that topic has not come up at some point. And I think that that is one of those games that did what it does brilliantly and really actually got people really on, like, the conversation for this. And so many people, like, not just queer people, but, like, across the entire spectrum have really kind of latched on with that game in a way that I don't think we've seen from an indie title in quite a long while. I would, and maybe go as far to say maybe Bastion was the last one that I remember having that kind of penetration. So that would be my nomination for Tea of the Year. Mr. Ian, you have 3 minutes. 3 minutes, sir.
Fuck you. So, Doke isn't wrong. Infinite is definitely way up there for the game that generated the most conversation.
Dialogue.
But I think it leans, I think, a lot closer to Minecraft for me, because Minecraft on a regular basis, especially in our Discord server, like, Minecraft is a constant thing. Like, once we got rolling in Minecraft and started in our world, like, that was daily just about, look at what we found, look at what we're doing, are you guys going to be on later, like, what do you guys want to do next in Minecraft, hey, I found this thing over here, hey, there's this cave over here, hey, did you see what's coming in the new update, like, that's been an ongoing thing for the better part of the year, and it's a continual conversation as opposed to the Halo Infinite conversation, which has been more like, I'm just gonna piss and moan about this for the next 30 minutes and repeat the same points over and over again.
And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the phrase. And those in between, he does.
I spent last night, the better part of 5.5-6 hours just going ahead and yep. burning through the end, and
yep.
by the end, it there was some hate playing going on.
Oh yeah.
I have a lot I could say about that game.
So rounding, like, since we're on Halo Infinite, I'm going to ask you this, Doke. You've nominated Halo Infinite, but I have to ask, is that because of its proximity? Because Halo is, let's be frank, Halo is a game we all bonded on. Also, Halo Infinite just released. So is there any bias there about how recently that released?
No.
Okay.
It was just about the content itself that was in the release.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Chris, so you nominated It Takes Two,
mm-hmm.
Which you're right, it has generated conversation, not all for good reasons, as you point out.
Uh-huh.
But I'm curious, because the key thing on this category is how much conversation it's generated for you personally, like, in general sphere. How much of that have you had with that, or are you nominating it more for the general conversation that's been in the zeitgeist?
Well, I have talked about, I don't talk about the game to everyone, because not everyone I interact with plays games. I have mentioned it to a fair few people, just you know, to the point of like, oh, shall we check this out kind of thing. And it's, yeah, and often when I say check it out, it does come with a caveat, like, just take the story a bit lightly, like, don't think too much about it, that kind of thing.
I'm curious, is it one of those games where, because this happens occasionally, where it would be a case of, here is the story, here is the gameplay, don't give a shit about the story, just enjoy the good time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay. It's one of those, definitely.
Okay. there's arguments to be made that if it does that, it kind of fails its job as a game, but that's a whole other discussion, I think.
I mean, the game for me is about the gameplay, and this is where Halo Infinite comes in. It's like, if you've pissed me off with the gameplay, I no longer care about the story so many times, which happened quite a bit.
So, making the case a little bit more for Hades, the thing that I would say is, I said, like, the queer community really latched onto this, and with that, I'm talking the LGBT plus community, to be clear, like, and while there are definitely some things that you can say the game developers knew they were doing, like the artwork on Zagreus, for example, I don't think it was designed to bait the queer community as much as some people may think it is. I think this is just one of those things where it just struck just right, just at the right moment. And the fascinating thing to me is the way that it latched into the queer community, like heteronormative communities, like everyone found something in that game. And that to me, it, like, everyone has something they love about that game somewhere in my experience. Whether it be the gameplay, whether it be the art style, whether it be the love story that's played out, whether it be the weird bromance between Zagreus and Achilles, whether it be, you know, whichever section of it is, there's something that just about everybody seems to relate to somewhere within that game. And I think that's the reason that I ended up putting that nomination for, because it's just so, so universal in a weird way. Not enough to make me put it into the inclusive category, because it's not something that was done for inclusion, I don't think. I think it's just a really well-made game. And the fact it came from an indie developer as well, one, I think that says a lot about the state of video games, but two, it's fascinating how well-polished that game is.
Well, I mean, you said right there, indie games, like AAA games, have trended for a long, long while now towards being extremely safe. Like, even if it's a new IP, like Destiny is arguably probably one of the most interesting new IPs to come out in the last 10 years. And even that's still, like, it's a shooter, dude. Like, there might be some interesting stuff going on, but it's still just a shooter. Like, the indie games have for a while now been the really interesting ones to try and branch out and do new stuff. The most annoying thing to me about indie games is most of the time they end up being platformy or something, and that's just not my jam.
I get that. I mean, closest analogy I can give for you personally is that it works combat-wise similar to Diablo, but without the loots aspect.
Okay. So Twin Stick?
Is it Twin Stick? Yes. No.
Not like Geometry Wars Twin Stick. Like Diablo Twin Stick, where you like aim and look around.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But you're using buttons to attack.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we have had a little bit of round robin. We have our nominations. Would anybody like to vote for a different game?
I mean, I talk about Hades enough on this podcast, so it's logical for me to Google that anyway.
Okay, so we currently have, like, I've got to admit though, I am tempted towards Minecraft. Because I do agree with you, it has been a constant conversation.
I mean, it hasn't been a... That's kind of the way I've looked at the entire prompt here. It's not the game that's generated the most interesting conversation all the time, but it has, like, we talk about it a lot.
It has been enjoyable conversation as well.
Yeah, no, it's just... It's
mostly
it's
positive.
Very chill conversation, and like a lot of it, like, we'll have really in-depth conversations about where we're going to go next and how we're going to get there and plotting this and plotting that and, like, figuring out, you know, just logistically how we're going to do stuff. And I think that's been really cool. Like, it's been a huge conversation driver for that.
It's been good to have Minecraft as well, because it's had wonderful updates.
Yes, it has.
And my thing about Infinite has been kind of like you said, Simon, where it's, yeah, we've been talking about it a lot, but it's also like the game of the moment. And when like you get very passionate, I get very passionate about it for sure. When I'm playing it, about everything that I dislike and the things that I do like that I wish were different. And that's one that, you know, 6 months from now, I'm probably not going to be talking about as much, but Minecraft definitely still will be.
Yeah. And when you put it like that, I kind of agree. Okay, let's go around the same order. Anyone, like, what's your vote based on everything that we've said? Chris?
I'm voting Hades. You're voting Hades? I don't play Minecraft. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's fair. No, Doke?
That's fine.
I'm going to vote Minecraft.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to vote Minecraft. Ian?
I do understand the Hades talk, but having not played it again just... And again, going back to how I see the question, it's what we've talked about the most. And well, I'm not necessarily fully in your circle either. This is in our circle with me. Like, it's been Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's where I'm going. Like, I don't play Minecraft, and therefore I haven't had any of that conversation.
That's fair. And that's fair. I get my level. I think for me, like, I do have to agree with your reasoning there. It is something that hasn't waned with time, and I think that has been the thing with the other three nominations. Like, they definitely generated conversation, they definitely generated buzz. Yeah, there's like in the case of Hades, there's definitely still people that I'll talk to now and go, hey, that was, you know, what about this, what about that? But I don't think it necessarily has had the same ongoing power. Okay, so that is our first award, should we say, of the tea of the year goes to Minecraft. The tea of the year goes to a 10-year-old game, because that's the other thing. Minecraft is it exactly a decade this year, or is it like a little bit over? I can't remember, but still, like, this is, it's kind of insane to me how long that game has been around as well. So, Chris, would you like to introduce the next topic, since it was one that you brought forth?
Yeah, so this is the category to do with inclusivity. That includes basically anybody who's not represented that much on games. So that's disability, accessibility, of course LGBTQ+, and yeah, everything to do with inclusivity. And this is the fruit tea category, as you name it.
So running in reverse order, Mr. Ian, your nomination, please.
I don't think I have one.
Okay.
That's short.
I mean, yeah. You're welcome. I saved you a lot of time there, so I can make up that time elsewhere. I don't have one.
Fair enough. My nomination for this year, then. I am going to maybe catch a little flack off Chris for this. I'm not sure. Because I'm slightly sidestepping the definition of the award. Which is that I am going to nominate the Xbox platform itself. Ooh. And the reason for this is twofold. Xbox has done a lot of work on inclusivity in gaming, honestly, for the last few years, but particularly this generation over the last year or so, because considering most of the Series X stuff as this year, because it came out like when it did and there were supply shortages. They've done like two very big things that I want to highlight as being sort of the reason that I'm nominating. One is that they have included within their online store interface accessibility information as part of a game's description. So it will tell you if it has narrated menus, audio description, color blindness settings, etc. that is brilliant in itself because it allows people to start to filter their games with to see whether it's got what they need without having to waste the money on it or do that much extra research just to see if it will work for them. The other thing that they've really excelled with, and I haven't seen any other platform apart from maybe PC that's done this well, because PC you can kind of work it around to do what you need it to do. That's so, you know, built in on that front, is they have worked on a peripheral that will allow people with mobility issues, etc., to use existing controls and things that they are already familiar with to map the inputs as though it was an Xbox controller. And what this is basically there's a little controller box thing that you get. On the back of it is a standardized port that you can plug in a lot of standardized connections from mobility aids into. And on each port, it says, okay, this is the A button, this is the X button, the Y button, so on and so forth. And basically, you can create your entirely sort of custom rig based on your own individual physical needs. Mm-hmm. This is a massive game changer because this allows so many more people to get into gaming that couldn't before. And not every game is going to work brilliantly for this kind of thing. Like that's a thing that's going to be a given because there are some games that like it's yeah. You know, for certain disabilities it's not going to work because it's too twitchy or whatever. But for the amount of extendability that enables, for me, that meets the category because it allows access to so many more games and includes so many more people through it.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Doke.
Yeah.
For me, my nomination is going to have to be Forza Horizon 5.
Okay.
Okay.
Halo, Forza Horizon 5.
Yes. I'd play that.
So, first off, as far as like inclusivity, this will be the first Forza finally to include pronouns in their character creation, as well as your other standard character creation things.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can be he, him, she, her, they, them. But the thing that really got my attention was the accessibility options they've started giving people. First, they have an offline speed option, so you can like slow down the game speed and to meet your reflex times. As oh, wow. Being. They also, for people that are hard of hearing, this is to be determined, but they boasted having an on-screen ASL interpreter. Whether this is live or recorded, like with dialogue and things, I'm not sure. But it's something that I would actually love to have turned on, not as someone who needs it, but as someone who would like to relearn it.
Mm-hmm.
But those were just the big things that really got my attention about it. Just fair their enough. Accessibility features that they were starting to introduce.
Okay. Chris, what is your nomination?
My nomination, speaking of continue the conversation, I am going to nominate Hades.
Oh, okay.
Because it does have a cast of very inclusive characters. I don't know what you're talking about when you say it's not inclusive enough to be nominated here.
Oh, no. Sorry, go on.
You have got Achilles and Patroclus, who is a clear gay couple who've been separated at death. Zagreus himself is bisexual. You have got a cast of all kinds of ethnicities being represented there. Zagreus himself is in a family, a mixed family with his stepmother. So, yeah, it's a whole cast of inclusive characters.
Let me be clear. I was never saying that Hades was not inclusive. What I was saying is I sidestepped it for my nomination here. And the reason that I'd sidestepped it is because of the nomination that I did end up making. I wasn't saying it wasn't inclusive. So let me just like make that one point of clarification.
Yeah.
Don't
realize that I do kind of have one.
Okay. I mean, by all means, throw it in.
It's actually Doke that remind me of this. The accessibility options in Control.
Yes.
Which was always fascinating to me because it's a game called Control that made sure you had control.
Of your controls.
Of your controls. So it wasn't, I don't think it was necessarily like you had the freedom to remap all of your controls, but there was ability. You did?
You do. Okay.
Cool, because there was also the ability to basically custom tailor the difficulty level. Like, you could play it on the hardest difficulty if you wanted to have that challenge, but then also, like, make it so enemies would not hit you as hard, or you could do more damage to them, or if you were really just there for the story, make sure everything was instant kill. God, there was a lot that you could do. Like, there was unlimited power spending, I think, too, so you didn't have to worry about, you know, recharging your powers or getting that meter back up. Like, there was all sorts of really cool little options in there to make sure that while the game could be almost stupid hard in places, like, you could absolutely get through it.
It would spike for no reason.
Yeah.
So I'm going to... Okay, so my question about control is, because I've heard you guys talk about this a little bit, so I haven't played it, let's be clear. If I'm getting this mistaken...
To be fair, I haven't played it in months. I have yet to actually finish it, because I've started it, and then I was waiting for Next Gen to pick it up again.
So,
like, mostly just to see if it would perform better, and I haven't touched it since.
It does.
So, okay. If I'm mistaken here, please correct me. My understanding is that game did not launch with all of those accessibility controls, however.
No.
They had to be added in post.
It did not, but that wasn't that far behind, was it? It was only 2 months?
I was still playing it when they patched it in, so...
Right. That was fairly quick after launch. Like, it wasn't a long thing after launch. I think it was more like... It always struck me as one of those things, and I'm not going to take the time to try and Google and figure out when the hell this came out, or the where twos and the why fours, but it always struck me as something that was already in progress, and they just went ahead and gold certified the game, got it out the door, and then put this in when it was feature complete.
Right, okay. Because my only concern with that is, does it indicate that this was something of an afterthought rather than something integrated to the design of the game?
It felt like a response to, we're sorry we made a difficult game, as sarcastic as that sounds. Like, we apologize. Here is our solution for you to make it as accessible and enjoyable for you.
Ringing a vague bell. Like, there might have been discussion about people who needed some accessibility help because they really wanted to play it, and because of difficulty and control issues, it just wasn't happening, so they actually made it happen.
And while I definitely respect them stepping up, like, having realized that they messed up,
right,
that does indicate to me that inclusivity was not necessarily at the forefront, versus something like Hades, where it's like, the inclusivity of various different backgrounds, etc., was integral to the game and is very showing of a studio that put together a game that wanted to tell a fully fleshed out story that people could relate to, or Doak, who's bringing one in where, you know, ASL and things in there in a video game, is like, that will have had to have been factored from the start to make sure that all of that builds in correctly, etc. Like, that to me tells me that inclusivity was more forefront in that respect.
No, I don't see a problem of responding to something that needs improving. As obviously, it wouldn't be the first Forza game to be made. So this is clearly a response to previous generations of.
And that's fair, Forza, but FPS not in some way taking, like, credits and leans from other FPSs that have gone before it? Like, fair enough, might not be developed by the same studio, but you can very easily be looking at these things and going, hey, like, how can we make sure that we're able to include more people in this?
I think it's more critical when it's the same developer.
Oh, absolutely. Don't get me wrong, absolutely. But my thing is, I'm hesitant to award an inclusivity award to a game that had to have it patched in.
No, I mean, okay. At the same time, here was the situation. This was a year post-launch, and this was an update that dropped with the AWE expansion, so its second expansion.
Okay.
And among the things that changed, because there were a lot of complaints about checkpoint systems and how lengthy and difficult boss fights could be, which they are, and checkpoints could be fairly stingy, especially if you were, like, you could get a checkpoint in one place that could be, you know, a ways before a boss fight, and that would mean you'd have to restart at, like, a control point, like, it would feel like miles from your boss fight if you died during the boss fight, so you had to march all the way back to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So they rebalanced control points and moved some of them around. They implemented soft checkpoints to break up lengthier boss fights. They introduced the assist mode, which is what I'm talking about here, the options that you could turn on and off, which include how much damage you take, how much damage you deal, how quickly things reload. You could turn on invulnerability. It definitely was a post-launch, like, year-on way to rebalance the game and make it. It was a responsive thing, but it was a way to rebalance the game and make it easier for people to enjoy it.
I mean,
yeah, which I think is fair enough, because they could have equally just gone, oh, fuck you, I'll put those in Control 2 instead.
And that's fair. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm not saying it isn't a good thing that they did it. Just, I do think that maybe it's important to acknowledge.
No, I think it's more important that they listen to the feedback and put it in, like, right now, rather than wait till a few years when we release the fucking sequel.
Fair. I don't know.
There are multi levels to this, I think, is what it comes down to. And the first level is going to be, did you think this through ahead of time? Because if you did, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The second level is going to be, have you actually listened, and is this responsive? Because if it's responsive, that's still extremely respectable. Like, it took them a year to get it into the game, but that was, like, in line with the launch of the second DLC, which was the last DLC pack for it, and basically the last full update for the game. Like, this was almost the way they wrapped up and did, like, the last major end-of-life update for the game.
Okay.
Quality of life update.
Thank you, This
inclusivity is a constantly improving thing, so...
Yes.
It's... Yeah.
That's fair.
Which, I would like to go back on one thing that I wanted to touch on, and then we can move on.
Mm-hmm.
If I can talk directly to the game developers out there, I would really love it if you guys would allow me to customize my controls completely. Like, this is a thing that... I have found with Game Pass, a lot of games could be fun if their controls were not shite.
Mm.
Like, if I could make it something to where it's enjoyable for me rather than them telling me how I should play the game,
I would really
like a lot more games.
I think it's kind of fascinating because there's definitely an element of that coming through a lot more in newer titles. And I think it's actually a result of the fact that a lot of Microsoft game studio titles, which is what the majority of Game Pass is made up of, release simultaneously now on Xbox and PC. And this generation is much closer to PC hardware than we've had in previous generations. And so because of that, I think it's kind of changed the way that some developers look at things. But you've still got some developers that are lagging behind on that as well. Because there's definitely, in my experience, been a flow of games moving towards this idea of allowing you to set your own custom controls, but here are what we recommend.
And I'm absolutely okay with having defaults. Like,
you have to have defaults.
Yeah, if I mess it up to where it's unfixable... My apologies, I'll give your defaults a try again and then work on it.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely helped me with Infinite, being able to remap every. I mean, and Infinite still has Infinite has a lot of problems with remapping because there are things that should be able to remapped or a certain way that just don't work.
Well, this is the other thing, isn't it? If you're going to allow remapping, make sure your remapping works, because I've definitely run into that in more than one game. Where it's just like, hey, you can remap this until you can't.
Yeah.
So, Chris, in terms of Hades, is there anything you want to add?
No, I don't need to add anything. We've discussed Hades already.
Fair enough. The only thing that I will add for mine is that I was making the point with Control about how it was added in after the fact. There's definitely an argument to be made that that is what the accessibility control system does for Xbox as a platform. And I'm not going to sit here and deny that because that's the truth of it. But I think that...
Well, it also blows a big giant hole in your entire argument right there now, doesn't it? Because nobody could ever plan a platform from the ground up with something like that in mind.
No.
That would always have been an afterthought.
And I will grant you that, but I will also say that the main launch of that came around the same time as the Series X. That was something that Microsoft did look at and their history and go, we can do better.
I thought that entire kit started launching around the 1X.
Yes, that's 1X.
Was it the 1X? I thought it was the Series X.
Yeah,
that was
it came out with the 1X.
No, that was 1X. That was Xbox One. That was a couple years ago when that came out.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. So, round robining on the nominations again, Chris?
I'll go Forza.
You go Forza. Doke?
I'll second Forza.
I am torn.
Although I will say Control was one that popped up I wasn't thinking about.
I am torn on Control. And you're right. My thing of playing it from the ground up does blow a hole in it. And Doke, let me ask you this. Have you tried the ASL stuff on Forza?
Last I checked, it was not available yet. If you want, I can boot up real quick and look for it.
No, that's okay. Okay, so I'm going to go Control. On the basis that, including the pronouns and better trans representation in Forza is great, including the additional... sign language, etc. in Forza is absolutely spot on. I will grant Control, however, being able to adjust to that level of micromanagement that you described will allow a lot more people to get access to a game that will have problems with in terms of the speed, etc. required. And it kind of feeds in with my own of sort of how, I said, the mobility access tools that they're providing is great, but there are still going to be some games that, unfortunately won't work with that setup. That kind of micro-level control makes it so that the two together could have a much more significant impact, and on that basis, I'm going to head over towards Control. Ian?
Another thing to add here, Control is also notable... in terms of inclusion and accessibility, because it has a very, very strong female lead as the player character.
Mm-hmm.
She does not need to be saved by anybody. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's out of her element, but she just takes it in stride and keeps this. She's a really good character. And it's very much they wrote character first and then they just made her female, which is exactly what they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot to like about that, and Doke and I both have used the new options at some point for either just to play around
or to finally go
in and kick a boss's ass because it was just a pain in the butt.
It needed to die.
But I think Control's already the winner. If I have to pick something that I think is truly game-changing, it's going to be the controller, that Xbox Assist controller. And it's not just the Assist controller. There's a whole lot of accessibility built into the system now, whether it's the ability to globally, like at a system level, remap buttons. Or there's the co-pilot setting where yes. you can two controllers and you can make up a full controller. One person controls one half, the other person controls the other half. Like, that's a really cool thing. Like, they did a lot in terms of trying to make things a lot more accessible that I think is really, really cool. So, yeah, my vote would go towards that.
So, we have a winner there, then, in Forza.
Woo!
Forza?
Probably a surprise winner, but yeah.
So I'm sure this one's going to generate some conversation.
You say that like we haven't already generated a lot of conversation.
We will move on to the teabag of the year. Teabagging can be fun, but not if you're on the receiving end. And the game industry has definitely taken its opportunity to put us on the receiving end this year. And a lot of people, as I mentioned at the head of the show. The teabag award goes to the worst gaming of the year. Shall we start with Chris?
You can start with me. Probably one of the biggest flops of this year. And this is going to be Marvel's Avengers. With its like repetitive gameplay, as you know, you can play with different characters, but they all are basically the same. You basically have one move to do for the entire 30 hours that you play the game. The multiplayer, after the campaign, it turns into a kind of multiplayer game as a service thing, which was super boring. Apparently, I haven't even got to that bit because the campaign is boring enough.
I have never heard you as unhappy with a game as when you were playing Avengers. I've heard you rip on some games. I've never heard you as unhappy with a game as you were with Avengers.
My microtransactions were all over the place, and the characters are also really badly designed, to be honest.
they look like poor cos.
Is it that they are badly designed, or is it that they were not true to comics, or is it that it's clearly trying to be the MCU and not the fucking MCU?
All of the above.
Because yeah, that was my biggest thing with the very first trailer I saw was I looked at it and I went, wow, you guys are trying to be the MCU, but it's like you didn't even get the B team. You got the D team to come and do these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably a big part of it. Like they're trying to be. Yeah. They're trying. I don't know what they're really trying to be.
They're trying to be the MCU and ended up being the Pound Store cosplay.
Yeah, yeah. They've done everything wrong with that game, basically.
Fair enough. Doke, your nomination, please.
I'm going to clarify by saying for me it was the most disappointing and least played. I picked up Mario Golf and played about 10 minutes of it.
Oh, really?
It's not a bad game. It is not a bad game. But for me, golf has always been one of those quiet, chill, relaxing, and then you get the irony of the super PO'd player that screams when they can't get the ball in the right position, yada yada. But Mario has taken and done what Mario does best, and excitement, energy, rush, fast, energy, and that's... You've lost the plot with golf at that point.
So what I'm hearing is Nintendo took golf and tried to turn it into a Twitch streamer.
I guess, yeah.
They took golf, they added cheerleaders, and they turned that motherfucker up to 11.
they tried to make Mario Golf into the NFL. Mr.
Well,
Ian.
That's a losing proposition anyway. You spin that.
Mr. Ian, let's shake this up. What's your nomination, sir?
For the most disappointing game of the year. Okay, so this is one that I actually have several for different reasons.
You have one nomination.
I have one solid nomination. But I did play a lot this year that I saw, and I'm like, yes! And then I played it, and it was just deeply, deeply disappointing. So the year started with... That brings us to another game that I desperately want to really love, and it's not meeting me where I need it to meet, and that's going to be Infinite.
So you mentioned four games there. You get one nomination.
It's Infinite. Infinite is your nomination.
Okay.
Infinite's, because Infinite is going to be the one game that we will be playing and continue to play. And Infinite, just the potential is there. They finally got so much right, and then they continued to just not hit the beats they need to hit. The free to play, not working for me. The storefront, total garbage. I'm sorry, I bought your season pass. The controls are okay. The UI is terrible. The HUD, there's elements on the HUD that are too small that need to be bigger. There are weapons that feel nonsensical and difficult to use for no reason. The maps are, some of them are great and some of them are really terrible, and there aren't enough of them. The game modes aren't there. The campaign has so many little problems that bug me. It's death by a thousand cuts. There's so much there to love. And then as soon as I start playing it and get just a little into it, I hit some bump and then a series of bumps, and then I'm annoyed. I desperately want to really like it. Don't get me wrong either. Like, 4 and 5 are perfectly respectable AAA games. Yep. They are not good Halo games. This is finally a good Halo game again, but it's like bottom tier Halo for me.
That's fair. My nomination is, and I went back and forth on this a lot, because I got stuck between Outriders and a Pokemon game, which I will mention in a minute. Outriders was just a complete trash show. Outriders was meant to be the Destiny killer. It was meant to be any number of things, quite honestly. And it was Titanfall all over again. But the game that ends up being my most hated, frankly, game of the year has got to be Pokemon Unite. Because that game is a utter, utter shit show. That if I wanted to play a gambling machine, I would go to a casino. This is a game that has 3 different in-game currencies, is very, very clearly pay to win. It's a collaboration between Game Freak and Tencent, and it has all the hallmarks of having interesting potential. Because, you know, taking Pokemon into an arena brawler type thing, like a la League of Legends and Smite, that kind of thing, that has an interesting, like, feel to it. I'm just not interested in that game at all, however, because you have put so many confusing systems in there designed to trap the player. And this, we're talking 3 different currencies, I think at least 1, possibly 2 of which you have to purchase. Like, this is very clearly pay to win, and this is everything that is wrong with free to play. It is designed to pull you in and confuse you so you spend money on the wrong thing, in my opinion. And it is even more disheartening to me because you are going to have a lot of young gamers that get pulled into this and don't see what's happening. Because it's presented in this way of, hey, you're powering up your Pokemon, you're doing this. Don't you love this Pokemon? Don't you want to get more of this Pokemon so it's stronger? Don't you want to do this? And it's a glorified combination of a gacha machine and a slot machine. This is such a nasty, insipitive piece of trash, quite frankly, which sets expectations in such a way that, like, you are going to either ruin gaming for people, put people into fucking debt because it basically preys on gambling addicts, or you are going to condition a young generation to thinking this is the norm.
What struck me about this immediately was you said it was a combination development between Game Freak and Tencent, and the first thing that jumped in my head was that gif of Adam Savage going, well, there's your problem.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna kick this off and say to Ian, each of us named a game that we cannot go back to because of how bad they are. you turned around and said, "It is a game that I will continue to play." If we are looking that this category goes to the worst of gaming for the year.
So the initial question that I have was the worst / most disappointing game of the year. Now, did this get edited down the line somewhere and I missed
it? No, I don't. Here's the thing. I don't disagree with your nomination, but I think compared to the other three nominations, I think it ends up becoming a disqualification. Because, a significant detriment to the nomination.
Fair.
But hey, you've got three others to pick from.
I'm not saying it's not a valid choice, because it is, because I get it, and honestly, I'm there with you on the criticism of this game. I have waxed lyrical on 343 Taylor on this podcast many a time.
Yeah, and it's I understand, like, the three of you have all played something that you just went, "This is total trash, I will never come back." And I have three of those that I did the exact same, well, two others of those, because at some point Odyssey will be playable. Two others there that I just went, I ain't coming back to either one of these. For me, it's Infinite that's crushingly disappointing, because it's Halo. We finally have a new Halo title. It looks like Halo. It sounds like Halo. It damn near moves like Halo. It, for all intents and purposes, damn near is Halo, but it just doesn't hit the mark. Yep.
No, I get that.
For me, it's not the worst thing I played, not even close, but it is easily the most disappointing.
Fair enough. Chris, is there any redeeming factor of Avengers? I say with trepidation.
It's the Avengers. That's it. They got my money. That's it.
No, they didn't get my money. I got it on Game Pass.
Microsoft gave them your money. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know what it was doing on Game Pass. Take it off.
Doak, anything you wish to add for your nomination?
No, and I think I'm ready to vote.
Fair enough. I don't think I need to add anything more on mine, because I think I got a little bit too angry. So let's round robin the room in reverse. Let's round robin. I will go last, because I am sort of orchestrating the maneuvering. So, Mr. Ian.
I see the case for Avengers, I really do, because even I looked at it and went, nah, I don't think so, but it's still going to be Halo for me. It's so disappointing.
Fair enough, Mr. Doak.
I think I'm going to go with Pokemon Unite, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because gotta get them all.
Ooh.
Bravo, see, bravo.
This is the thing that also strikes me about that game. It's kind of, it strikes me almost as shovelware, and it's like every franchise needs a shovelware title at some point.
But you know what? It's so well done. Like, legitimately, if you took out the microtransactions. Anyway, Chris.
I'm sticking with Avengers.
I'm going to dig my heels in on Pokemon Unite, just because I think it represents such a fundamental problem with where gaming is going.
I don't think you can be unbiased.
I can't. No, and I will frankly grant, the gaming censors me. Like, I can't take the blinkers off because of it. Like, it censors me.
No, I mean, well,
the thing is with Pokemon Unite, it's the first time I even look at it, I'm like, no. I don't even have to think about it.
True smoking hot garbage. Like,
so, worst game of the year, the teabagging game of the year, is Pokemon Unite. Which brings us on to the final category, but before we get there, are there any honourable mentions that people would like to make?
I do.
Go on.
So, maybe late last year, Dead Cells released what they are calling the Everyone Is Here update, which basically featured a lot of kind of cameos and I'm forgetting the word, but you would come across different characters from different games. weapons and items from different games. And as a Metroidvania roguelite kind of game, more roguelite, but, you know, Metroid's platforming, it was a reason to come back and revisit it, which roguelite games did not, once they reached that point, offer for me. It's like, yeah, been there, done that. And it was a nice comeback and just good, you know, moment to revisit.
Fair enough. Ian, any special mentions you wish to make? Honorable mentions, I should say, not special mentions.
I mean, I'm looking through the stuff that I played this year. I mean, I revisited Saints Row 2 for a little bit because that's the pinnacle of Saints Row. I did start Maze, which we talked about last year. Mm-hmm. Didn't get too far in that before it just kind of fell off the wagon.
That's fair.
Doke and I started playing Warlords of New York in Division. We did go back to that. That was fun. Division's always fun. I think the weirdest honorable mention I've probably got is going to be Star Wars Episode I Racer.
Sorry. That was an emoji noise.
Yeah.
I played the shit out of that game as a kid.
So did I. Like, we had it on PC, and we wore through a joystick playing the shit out of that game. And I saw that come up for, like, I don't know, like $5 on the Xbox store a while back. And I went, I need this. Like, and don't get me wrong. It is a terrible port. The interface is bad.
It was always bad.
The controls are not explained at all. You just have to fumble your way through until you find what you're looking for. But it's still fun because it's fucking pod racing. Like,
I've just realized something. There is a flight stick for the Xbox and you can remap controls. I need to see if you can. That is a complete aside. Chris, honorable mentions, please.
Basically, I have shared most of the games that I play on this podcast.
I'm going to say, for me and you, this is not as...
Yeah, it's difficult to actually call up any games that I haven't already talked about. But in terms of some of the really good ones that I would have thought to put in to joysticks but didn't, Dorf Romantic would be one. I play a lot of these kind of chilled games this year rather than, you know, the triple A's. Yeah, Dorf Romantic is definitely one. Mini Motorways is probably another one. And I might put Moon Glow Bay on there as well. I played a shit out of Moon Glow Bay.
Fair enough.
It is on my play later list.
The only game that I'm because we discuss like the games quite often on joysticks, I'm going to limit myself to a single honorable mention. But it comes with a caveat, which is I'm going to mention Metroid Dread. Metroid Dread is a fantastic game. Metroid Dread is really, really well put together. It is visually beautiful. It is compelling story-wise. And I'm just so glad to have a 2.5, I guess, D Metroid again. Like, However, it comes with a caveat. The reason it didn't make any of the categories is... if I was going to put it forward for any, it would be best game of the year. However, there have been a lot of issues that came out about the developer not crediting people that worked on the game. Because for various reasons I'm not going to get into here, it's very easily findable if you search it. There have been issues with the developer not crediting people for their work on the game. I can't reward that. Like, point blank, I cannot in good conscience put that forth as best game of the year when the developer is being that... frankly arsey. But I will acknowledge here is honorable mentions, it is a brilliant game, and it is very much clear that it is a game that was made with a lot of love for what it is, and it's very disappointing people didn't get their due award of credit for that.
For those that don't necessarily want to search right this instant, is this another case of you left before development was complete, so we're not going to credit
basically
you?
Like that's the very basic version, but I can't in good conscience put it forth knowing that.
I think the follow-up is, how did they handle that?
terribly.
It's a douchey thing that's been going around the industry for years. Yeah.
So
if you're not there when they wrap and it goes gold, you don't get credit.
So on to the joystick of the year, the game that represented to us the best gaming of the year. I would like to start this one, since I haven't started one yet, and say I am going to nominate, and Chris, you mentioned this before, I'm going to nominate Dwarf Romantic by Tucana Games. This is a game that I have waxed lyrical on this podcast about before, because it is such a great chill-out game. It is very simple. It is a simple concept. Match the corners of it of each hexagonal tile, and make sure that you are doing this to up to the goals that pop up along the way, and increase your score and chase the high score. But it does so in a way that, like, you can choose to chase that, and you can choose to really sort of min-max that and try and get every single point on the board. Or you can just go into the game and go, you know what, I just want to play something nice and chilled with a nice, gentle soundscape that's just going to let me kind of sit here and chill and honestly turn my brain off for a little bit. And I've needed a lot of that this year, quite frankly, because I've been very honest on the show before. Like, I've had difficulty with my mental health this year. This game has been an absolutely fantastic retreat for me. The other thing about this game for me is the origin of this game. This is an indie title, but it's not just an indie title. This is an indie title that started by a group of school friends that were working on a project together. And it became this giant of a thing that really did capture anyone that was paying attention to indie games. And it's another one of those fantastic experimental games to have come out here and just taken off. And what's really nice to see is that even though it's still in early access and the developer is listening to the community, they're adding things all the time. They've changed certain aspects of the way the game works so that you've got additional tiles that do X, Y, and Z that the community's been asking for, etc. There's something really just very pleasing about that game that, like, we talked earlier about games that we've talked about a lot. This is a game that I have gone back to a lot. I have played this game at least 2-3 times a week since I purchased it, and I have never once regretted that purchase. We will run around again, so we'll go to Mr. Doak.
Well, I need to reconsider my nomination because it was Metroid Dread.
Sorry. By all means, put it forward. I couldn't put it forward in good conscience for myself.
I mean, yes, it hit the marks as a continuation of the Metroid series. It's just unfortunate to hear that, and I don't know how I missed that side of the development.
It's one of those that I think it was weird because it managed to slip under a lot of the gaming radar. I only know about it because I follow a couple of Nintendo-only YouTube channels that deal only with like Switch games and things, and it was coming up in the news in there. Like, it managed to miss a lot of the mainstream gaming press.
Forza Horizon 5?
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Yep.
For the reasons I touched on earlier. Yeah.
Yep, that's perfectly fair.
And it's a perfectly good game in itself, yeah.
I mean, that's one of those I haven't actually managed to pick up yet.
Anything it's also the game, I mean, I was going to say that it's the game that I picked it up, I played through it, I enjoyed it, and I still come back to it when I'm in the mood to just drive around, which, now that I'm not delivering pizzas anymore, is something I enjoy again.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't think you were ever delivering pizzas in that end of the world, but sure. Well, yep.
Yep.
Chris, your nomination, please.
Okay, this is going to be a slightly weird one. None of you are going to vote for this, but don't worry. This is Wilder Myth I'm going to nominate.
Ooh, okay. This is one that's on my to playlist, but I haven't got to it yet. So please do make your case, because I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting kind of party RPG kind of turn-based thing. The interesting bit is the story is procedurally generated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people kind of write some modules to, like, okay, this is what a chapter that kind of happens now, and then there's a bit of a story, and then you jump into a battle, and then you come out of the story, and then there's a conclusion, and then there's that module of the campaign, and then you move on to the main objective, usually of a campaign, but that's all procedurally generated, like the whole main quest of each campaign.
Okay.
Decisions carry through, even though, you know, there is no one actually writing the story, and it still makes sense. And yeah, it's very, very, very interesting game. It's kind of almost a bit like D&D as well. I like that bit of the kind of tabletop RPG kind of visual style.
Fair enough. Mr. Ian, your nomination, please.
For the best game of the
year. Best gaming experience of the year. One nomination, sir.
I don't really have one, but I think if I have to pick the game that intrigued me the most, the game that I was most interested in, and this is absolutely not going to win any awards here today, Cyberpunk 2077.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. That's considering that game got canned by his indie awards last year.
So here's where, yeah, no, and here's where I'm coming from on this. I did not pick that game up until it was on sale a couple months ago. And when I finally picked it up, most of everything that was terrible about it at the time is a vague, distant memory for me. I mean, you're divorced from its launch now. So at the price point I picked it up at, and with what I've played so far, it's been pretty cool. There is a lot that is clearly missing or broken or got cut. There is a lot that doesn't make any sense. There's a lot that I remember that was promised that would have been really cool that is not shown up at all yet. But like, for what I've been given, it's been pretty cool. Like,
can I interrupt you 1 second? You said at the price point that you picked it up at, do you know roughly what that was? Doesn't have to be exact, just a rough idea. Bucks? 20, 30 bucks. Okay.
It's like 20, it's half price, okay. Somewhere in that range. But I mean, I'm not even that far in the story yet. Like, I have yet to do whatever main story it is where you go and you infiltrate the Maelstrom warehouse to get the thing that I guess has Keanu Reeves on it. But it's been cool to just kind of wander around the city and be like, there's some dudes over there. I'm going to stealth over there and hack their brain and short circuit them and make that guy fall off the building and then plug this other guy with my silenced revolver that doesn't make any sense. No, like, it's been cool for that stuff. And like, I'm going to grab this guy and hide his body in this dumpster over here. And oh, well, that all went to shit. Let me get out my electric shotgun. Like, It's been cool. Like, I approach most of the stuff the same way. The driving is terrible. The streets are empty. Like, there's no reason for me to do any of that. It's more fun to just walk around and see what happens.
So what I'm hearing is it's become a cyberpunk version, ironically. Well, anyway, it's become a cyberpunk version of GTA for you. Because, or at least what GTA is to me. Because I never bothered about the GTA storyline. I just enjoy messing around in the sandbox.
I would say it's actually a lot closer to being an open world Deus Ex.
Okay, yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah, because Deus Ex plays a lot of the same way for me. Like, I lean heavily into the stealth, and I'm not super great at it, but I try to be. And I'm prepared, like, when the shit inevitably hits the fan, I'm ready to go in guns blazing and, you know, take cover somewhere and just destroy these fools that saw me like they shouldn't have. They couldn't just look the other way. And you know, get their neck snapped like a good boy. But yeah, that's how I play a lot of Deus Ex, and that's how I've approached a lot of Cyberpunk. And just like Deus Ex, the last part I played I don't even know if you remember this guy. There was a monk at one point. You have to go save his brother or something. Yeah, it's a weird little side quest. But I went to the place where they're holding his brother and basically waltzed right through the front door. And dude's sitting right here, but I can't save him until I've neutralized everybody else in the building, which was ridiculous. And I'm jumping around looking because he wanted his brother to be saved peacefully. I'm not seeing any way to do that. So I wasn't seeing any way to do that. So, okay, I guess everybody's just getting a bullet in their head. And I clear the facility and I'm walking around afterwards looking around. And that's when it wasn't until after the fact that I'm like, oh, there's a place in the ceiling I could have breached there. Oh, there's this. Oh, there's a door down here I could have hacked to open that. I could have come in the back way. Oh, I should have looked around a little more before I came in here. Like, just like Deus Ex. Like,
fair enough. Would anyone like to add
been interesting.
Anything more to their nominations?
No, I'm just going to say we've gone pretty out there with our nominations. For
Like, I'm kind of liking how diverse these are.
And again, like, I'm not expecting to win any awards here. I don't think that's
I can tell you now, you're not getting a vote off me on that.
No, it's not the best game at any point, but I do think it's the most interesting thing I've played so far.
Fair enough. Let's roll back round then. Let's start with Doe, because I'm not sure you've done a vote first yet, so your vote, please.
I mean, I feel like I should stick with Forza because I didn't really play the other two.
Fair enough.
That you two spoke with, and that's excluding Cyberpunk.
Okay. Chris.
Yeah, it's a difficult vote. I can vote for three games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not voting for Cyberpunk.
Give me a minute. I'll hack your brain and short circuit for Cyberpunk.
Yes, hack our brains. Tell us what to vote for.
It is Wildermyth and Forza that I would go back to.
Okay.
I've kind of dropped off the Dwarf Romantic
bandwagon. Fair enough.
Even though they've added bears into the game. I don't know. I think I'm going to stick with Wildermyth because there's a lot of potential in that.
Okay. I am caught between Wildermyth and Dwarf Romantic. Chris, let me ask you this. You said that Wildermyth has modules that people put in. I don't know if it was just your phrasing. It struck me as kind of there's extensibility in there. Like people can like add their own.
Yes, absolutely.
So with the community is there like a Steam Workshop community aspect to it where people will be adding to it as an ongoing thing? Okay. That makes my vote easier then. I think I'm going to have to go for Wildermyth because that has the potential to extend out so far. And the gameplay it's very, like, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I have watched a good amount of it and it's very well put together. And you're right, mm-hmm. like that tabletop thing comes out really well on it. Mr. Ian.
I haven't touched a Horizon or really, really played a Horizon since 3. I dipped into 4, and I think the thing that turned me off about 4, weirdly, was the season play, and I don't know, it felt like it went too heavy into the RNG and the gambling and the, like, level up every single vehicle independent. I don't remember what really turned me off of 4, but I'd never played enough to get out of, like, playing through each season as an introduction before you get to, like, true season play. Is 5 any similar to that, or did they mix that up and kind of fix that?
I feel like they fixed isn't the word I would use, but they worked around it. And personally, I don't focus on the seasonal stuff whatsoever, except for, like, the seasonal speed traps that every time I go through, it tells me, wrong car class for this season. And I'm like, well, where do I go to find out which class it is so I can pick it? But beyond that, I pay no attention to the seasonal stuff except for the winter one, where they had, you know, Secret Santa, where a new feature, you can gift cars to random players, and if everyone commutatively gifted enough cars, it would unlock a skin and a car as two-tiered progress.
That's kind of a nice little
which I think, yeah, I think we ended up getting it. I forget what it was, though. But this time, you are kind of going back to building the community, the festival itself, and you can focus more on what you want to unlock. For me,
that
I focus...
That might have been another thing that turned me off before. It was... There was no festival locations. Yeah. I was unlocking houses that I couldn't do anything with. Like, yeah. Are we back to actually having multiple festival locations? Or
yes, and you still have multiple festival sites also, so it feels like a good mixture of both.
Yeah, you okay. still have houses and you have festival sites as well. Yeah.
And I was gonna say, for me, I love having speed traps. Speed zones, but I hate drift zones, honestly, because I can't do it.
I can now do, though.
Okay. I can attempt it, but most of the time, yeah. I just want to get through it so I have a score and just drive normally.
It took me
Anytime I try to do a drift zone, I don't drift through it so much as just try and slither sporadically until it gives me enough points to pass it.
But by default, those things are not active until you unlock the PR festival, and then you have them. So it's that kind of thing. Street racing, PR stunts, off-roading, and other stuff. But yeah.
I will freely admit, like, just because the game was interesting to me doesn't make it the best game. It's probably going to be Forza. I don't know. I really don't.
Ooh.
This isn't one that I have a game for.
This is interesting, then, because we end up with a two-way split.
I was going to ask, is it too late to vote for Minecraft?
Minecraft is the best game we played this year.
Technically, nominations and votes are different.
What?
There's a writing option, I guess.
Anything now?
We're doing write-in ballots now, is what we're doing. We nominated these guys, but we're doing write-in ballots.
In the interest of true democracy. So we have a tie.
That's fine.
Okay. I think that's the first time we've had a tied category.
Also the first time you've had four
votes.
It's a tied category with Minecraft as the winner in the shadows about to murder the other two.
Mario Golf.
I am A-okay with this being a tied
Steve's
category.
Steve's just back there with a pickaxe waiting to club the fool that comes around the curtain first. Like...
So, in a first for us, then, we have a category that is tied, and the joystick award of the year goes to Wildermyth and Forza Horizon 5. Yay! So, to recap, we have the most talked about game of the...
We have winners.
We have winners.
If you listened, you know what they are.
Yeah, no one cares.
Wow.
If you agree, you're happy.
The tea of the year, the most talked about year, goes to Minecraft. The fruit tea of the year, the most inclusive game of the year, was Forza. The tea bag, the tea bagging game of the year was Pokemon Unite. Was it? Yes. Pokemon Unite. For the sake of our listeners, it took us three attempts to record this. And the joystick of the year is a tie between Forza Horizon 5 and Wildermyth. So congratulations to the winners, commiserations to the losers, and a fuck you to the game industry as a whole.
No one really gets anything anyway, and none of you really care who wins any awards, so yes.
If we got any of those awards wrong, I didn't have any hand in this production, don't sue me.
Well, there's your problem.
No, just tweet at him.
By all means, tweet at us.
Don't at me, bro. Don't at me, bro.
If you spot an inconsistency, tweet at us. At TBNJ Podcast. anything that we want to add as we round out the show, Chris?
No, we're back in normal schedules. So,
we will be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll very big thank you to Mr. Ian and DOAK Doak for joining us.
Hi.
Would you like to plug yourselves? Where can people find you if they wish, or if you don't wish them to? Like, by all means, don't. We'll start with the DO, since I know that you have SoundCloud, etc.
If you wish to find my SoundCloud, you can search for it at doak.soundcloud.com.
How are you spelling DO these days? Is it just DO or DIO?
DIO. DIO. DIO.
Mr. Ian, would you like people to be able to find you?
No.
Okay, very well.
As usual, you'll be able to find the links to our guests in the description.
Indeed. And if you have any opinions on what we have discussed, positive, negative,
keep them to yourselves.
You think that we've got it completely wrong, please do let us know. You can message us on Twitter at TBNJpodcast, or they can leave us a voice mail where, Chris?
anchor.fm/TBNJpodcast.
We will be back with your regularly scheduled Teabags and Joysticks, Kink and Video Games. Thank you very much for joining us for these awards. I have been Cy.
I've been Chris.
I have been a real live person, man, and my name is Ian.
And I've been Doke.
Thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to go and get a stiff drink now. I don't know about the listeners. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
This episode is edited by TBNJ Chris. Our soundboard comprises royalty-free audio. The opening and ending music is Quarter Conundrum by DOAK. Thank you for listening to Teabags and Joysticks.
You know I'm going to give Chris like 12 hours of footage, sound clips to go through. Come on, Chris. I'm going to make your life a living hell. I'm going to make sure you got plenty to cut. Now, when you cut it, though, try not to edit out the essence and the soul of what I'm saying. That needs to stay put.